With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions that you wish to ask. And then she can either type a response or use their voice-to-text feature, and MyLifeInABook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy. It's something that you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. And this is something that Ethan and I had been thinking about doing with our parents. We have this podcasting equipment, so we wanted to find a way for them to tell their story. But I love this because it's so regimented. They send them a question every week, and it just makes it really easy and turnkey. And it just seems like a great way for us to get our parents' stories down so that our children and our children's children can have them. So if you're interested, check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG at checkout for 15% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com and use code ATTWG for 15% off today. Has it ever felt like you're doing everything right? You're eating healthy, you're working out, and yet your energy still crashes, or your mood swings hit out of nowhere, like a twist in a crime story that you didn't see coming. Listen, I've been there too, and what I've discovered is that many of these issues could be tied to hormonal imbalances, like a hidden criminal lurking in the background, throwing everything off track. But here's the good news. This is one mystery that you can solve with Happy Mammoth. There's no need for a long investigation. Just take the free 2-minute quiz from Happy Mammoth. You answer a few questions about what you're experiencing and where you're at in life, and you'll uncover the real culprit behind your hormonal symptoms. And the best part? After taking the quiz, you'll get a personalized recommendation to help you balance your hormones so you can finally feel like yourself again. According to a survey, after taking Hormone Harmony, 86% of women started to lose weight. 77% said that it improved their mood. And the biggest benefit? 100% of women surveyed said they're feeling like themselves again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code ATTWG at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code ATTWG for 15% off today. Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends that they'll deliver discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code ATTWG. It is wild how different each one of their gummies feels. Their sleepy time gummies knock me out in about 15 minutes flat with no hangovers, no grogginess, and I just wake up feeling amazing. Oh, and the Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your crap mood. What makes these different is how they pair THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're not going to just find gummies like this in a dispensary, or anywhere for that matter. And they have gummies for literally everything. Immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, and sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code ATTWG. So head to mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use promo code ATTWG at checkout to save 20% on your first order. Van life is a hashtag that has gained a lot of popularity on social media over the last year or so. Gabby Petito and her fiancé, Brian Laundrie, are emblematic of this trend. They're young, attractive, and Instagram ready. The engaged couple bought a van, redid the inside, and set off for a cross-country adventure where they embraced hiking, the land, and a simple life. The couple left on July 2nd, 2021, and were supposed to be gone for 4 months. But on September 1st, Brian returned home to Florida alone. Now, Gabby has officially been reported missing, but Brian isn't talking. Where is Gabby Petito? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell the stories of those who never came home. I want to tell you the story of Gabby Petito. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is And Then They Were Gone. Welcome back, everyone.
Hello, welcome.
If you're a regular listener, you'll know that this is not the day where we usually release a new episode. And that is because we actually took this week off and we weren't going to release an episode this week at all. But we just got back from New York City yesterday and I've been reading about the Gabby Petito case and I just felt that we had to talk about it today.
Yeah, I've only heard bits and pieces on the news that's just been on in the background.
Right.
So I know very little about the case.
Yeah, and I had also kind of only been following it in the background. Like, I didn't really know, you know. But yeah, it just, with what came out today, and it's September 16th when we're recording this, there's just so much going on that I thought that we really should talk about it. So this is basically a bonus episode. Like, I kind of, you know, I wrote a little bit, did some research, but, you know, this case is so current. I mean, as of today, at the time of this recording, she's reported missing less than a week ago. So we don't have, you know, a ton of information about her background and things like that. But there's also a chance that she's still out there alive. So we need to get as many eyes and ears on this case as possible. All right, so let's get to it. Gabby Petito is a 22-year-old woman from Long Island, New York. She was engaged to her boyfriend, 23-year-old Brian Laundrie. Brian was from Florida, and the pair had been living there in his parents' house for the past year. They had been engaged for a little while and were making wedding plans, but then when COVID hit, they kind of decided to push all of that back and they decided to take a cross-country adventure instead. According to the pair's YouTube account, which they created specifically for this trip, Nomadic Static, this actually isn't the first time that they've traveled cross-country together. They had previously made the trip in a Nissan Sentra and stayed in Airbnbs along the way.
That's a very small car to be traveling across the country in.
Yeah, exactly. And so this time they're like, you know what? That was fun, but maybe let's do something a little bit different. So they decided to streamline the process. Gabby bought a 2012 Ford Transit van, and they redid the interior to make it more of like an RV type of situation.
That's interesting. I mean, it couldn't have been very large inside.
No. No, but I mean, it was enough for two people. Like, they had a bed, you know, they could cook, like, you know, things like that. Although from what I could see from their social media, they mainly tent camped outside. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was kind of just a little bit more self-sustained than the original trip with the Nissan Sentra and the Airbnbs and things like that. And, you know, this is, I know you're not really on social media, so you probably haven't come across the whole van life trend.
No idea.
Yeah. So this is really a thing. And I think it kind of got big during COVID, you know, where people are like, oh my God, we're stuck in our house. What do? We want to go somewhere. And so they're kind of finding ways to go places. And so a lot of people started like redoing vans and things like that and just kind of taking off and working remotely.
Is that where you got the idea to renovate an RV?
Not exactly, but tangentially, like basically, yes. So yeah, so it's just like this need that people have had to just kind of get out and do something. And there are a ton of accounts, you know, all over social media. Even our friend is doing it. So Nicole is renovating a school bus in the same way.
I'm not sure how I missed that.
Yeah. So that's a whole other like subgenre of this called like schoolies. But yeah, it's all part of this like van life thing. So anyway, so this was the plan, you know, and they did have experience. Plus the pair, they're avid hikers. They're very outdoorsy, you know, like, so this is something that like didn't come out of nowhere, you know, this is kind of in their personality.
I mean, I suppose, but that seems just precarious. I feel tense and claustrophobic just thinking about it, like just being in that small space for such a long period of time.
Yeah. Well, like I said, again, they camped out a lot, you know, so they were driving across the country, but, you know, they were definitely enjoying the outdoors. Like they spent a lot of time camping and hiking. This trip started with them driving up to Blue Point, New York, which is where Gabby is from, to attend her younger brother's graduation. On July 2nd of this year, they left from there to start their adventure. The first Instagram post that Gabby posted from their trip was at Monument Rocks in Kansas. And this was on July 4th. After that, Gabby posted on Instagram every like few days or so, generally 2 to 6 days apart. So she wasn't like constantly posting, but she was posting regularly. Her next post after the one from Monument Rocks was on July 8th, and it was from Colorado Springs. The trip moved on from there with beautiful people enjoying beautiful scenery all over the country.
Well, it sounds like they're making really good time, too.
Well, yeah, I thought so, too, because like 2 days later, they were in Kansas, which seemed quick to me.
Yeah.
And that's just when she posted it. Like, I don't know when those she was actually there. Taken. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it did seem like they were like moving right along. And everything looked amazing. And it seemed as though they were having a great time. And I haven't seen anything since this whole thing started that said that there were red flags, you know. Gabby was in touch with her family regularly, like not every day, but generally when they would kind of go into town and get Wi-Fi or reception or whatever, she'd text or FaceTime and kind of check in with everyone and give them updates. Now we're going to go back and dig into the timeline a little more, but for a chronological overview, this is what we have based on Gabby's Instagram posts. So they left from New York on July 2nd, which wasn't on Instagram, but, you know, we know that from her parents.
Right.
Then they were in Kansas on July 4th, then Colorado Springs, Great Sand Dunes National Park in Colorado, Zion National Park in Utah, Bryce Canyon National Park in Utah, Mystic Hot Springs in Utah, Canyonlands National Park in Utah, and Arches National Park in Utah. And that post in Arches National Park was posted on August 12th. On September 1st, Brian was back in Florida and Gabby was not with him.
That's a pretty big gap.
Yeah, exactly.
Do we have anything in between or you're just going off of the Instagram timeline?
So those are what I would say the core Instagram posts from Gabby's account. So like I said, so they did, you know, it's interesting because in all of the early things that I heard and read about this case, it described them as like YouTubers. But they do have a joint YouTube channel that I mentioned earlier. There's only one post on it. There's one video. It's 8 minutes long and it's like an overview of their trip and it's dated August 19th. So they weren't chronicling their trip on YouTube like I had thought based on the stories. Mm-hmm. I looked at Brian's Instagram account. He had a few posts from the trip, but like two or three. I mean, only a couple. From what I haven't heard anybody mention them being on TikTok or any other social media platforms or anything like that. So I don't know. So what I've got is Instagram and YouTube, and the most posts are on Gabby's Instagram. So I am going to kind of jump back and forth a little bit here. Brian got back to Florida on September 1st. He stayed home with his parents for a week and a half. Now, I don't know a lot about what happened between September 1st and September 11th. So I don't know if Brian had been talking to Gabby's family at all, but we do know that Gabby definitely had not been talking to her family during that period. By September 11th, when they couldn't get in touch with her, and presumably they had been calling Brian and trying to figure out what was going on, you know, from him, but they weren't getting answers. So on September 11th, they reported her missing. Now, according to the GoFundMe page that a family friend set up to help with search-related expenses, Gabby was last known to be in Grand Teton, Wyoming, heading toward Yellowstone National Park on August 25th.
Didn't you say their last post was in Utah, though?
Yeah, so I'm going to get back to that because I thought that was interesting when I saw that on the GoFundMe. I was like, Wyoming, interesting. But that GoFundMe doesn't say how she was known to be there. Like, it just says she was known to be. It doesn't say if she was seen there, if she had called her family and mm-hmm. said, hey, I'm in Wyoming. If she had texted her family and said, hey, I'm in Wyoming.
Or if that was like the next stop on their trip.
Right. I just don't know the details of that. So with that in mind, I want to go back to August 12th. That was the day that Gabby posted photos from Arches National Park in Utah. Now, like we said earlier, just because someone posts something from a place like doesn't mean that that's where they were that day.
Right.
I just posted a bunch of photos from New York today, but we got back yesterday, you know? But the couple was nearby that day, and we know that for a fact because somebody called the police on them.
Oh, yeah.
Did you hear about this?
Yeah, I saw a story about this.
Yeah. Interestingly, and I think because this case is so new and so active, the police department who made this call are being very transparent, and they have released the full body cam footage of this incident. It's on YouTube. It's on our blog. So according to police body cam footage, they pulled the couple over around 4:45 p.m. on August 12th.
And where is this again?
This is right outside. This is near Arches National Park in Utah.
In Utah. Okay.
Yeah. And this is August 12th. Brian was driving the van and Gabby was in the passenger seat crying. So the officer pulls her over and asks her why she's crying. And she says that they had been arguing. He asks her to step out of the car and really upset. Like, he describes it later in the video as like she's hyperventilating, basically. So he has her step out of the car and he asks Brian to give him the keys to the van. And the officer takes the keys and places them on the hood of the van. He then tells Gabby to go sit in the back of his car in the AC. Because, you know, it's Utah, it's August. Like, I'm sure it's incredibly hot.
Yeah, sure.
Asks her to just kind of like go sit in the AC and just
breathe, basically. So he keeps on telling her throughout this whole thing that she's not in trouble. You know, he's just like, go sit down, kind of calm down. He doesn't say that, though, to his credit.
Yeah, never tell a woman to calm down.
Ever. So she goes into the car, and then he goes back to the van and talks to Brian. So he has Brian step out of the car, and he's talking to him, and the officer clearly sees that Brian has very fresh scratches on his face and his neck and his hands.
Hmm.
Brian is also clearly nervous and says that basically what had happened was that he had been trying to distance himself from Gabby during their argument earlier, and that during this he had locked the van and he had taken the keys. His explanation is kind of like, it's kind of hard to understand, but basically seeing like she had her phone and like she tried to get the keys from him, and so he pushed her away. And during this whole thing, she's like, I'm sorry, I pushed her, I didn't mean to push her, whatever, whatever. So he pushed her, and then she came after him and like scratched him trying to get the keys.
Are the scratches on both sides of his face? One
no,
side?
No, it looks like, and hands. Again, I don't know how the body cam works, so I don't know if this is like flipped or whatever, but it looks like it's just on the right side of his face.
Okay, well, either way, it's one side.
It looks like one side of his face, maybe on both of his hands, but I can't swear to that. Basically, it sounds like somebody, so this all took place kind of in front of a coffee shop, like in town, and so somebody called the cops on them then, who saw this whole argument.
Okay.
So then they drove away, and so the cops like were following them. And as the officer was trying to pull them over, Brian swerved and hit a median.
Oh.
So the officer's like, hey, what was that about? And he says that Gabby had grabbed the wheel and that's why he hit it. And then the officer's like, well, did she make you speed too? Because it took us a while to catch up to you. Mm. And he was like, oh, I guess I just had a lot of adrenaline. I didn't mean to. I'm sorry. So then a second officer goes to talk to Gabby, and it's kind of hard to hear what she says because all of this body cam footage is from this first officer. So it's another officer who's questioning her, and the body cam footage, he's standing behind that officer. So Gabby's kind of far away from him.
Gotcha.
The second officer asks if Brian hit her, and she says no, but that he did grab her face. And she shows them how he grabbed her. And it's like he basically like grabbed like her two cheeks.
Okay.
And like pulled her face like close to him. I didn't see any marks or scratches or anything on Gabby in this footage.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, so that's what she said. And then after that, there are portions where the sound has actually been redacted from the body cam footage for privacy reasons. So apparently Gabby starts talking about some of her mental health issues that she says kind of contributed to this whole blow up.
Okay.
So the police department, before they released the footage, kind of just took that audio out. They like left the video running,
mm-hmm.
but just silenced the audio. Basically to protect her privacy. After this, they go back to Brian and, you know, ask for his side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And according to him, basically it was just a lot of little things. And Brian this whole time is like, you know how it is. Like when you're in a relationship, you start bickering. It's not a big thing. It's just a lot of little things. And then stuff just blows up. So they had been at that coffee shop that I mentioned all day from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. is what he said.
Why?
Well, probably for Wi-Fi. So because they were working on this blog, they were working on this YouTube channel, they were working on all this Instagram stuff. And so I think that they were basically working at the coffee shop all morning.
Oh, well, that's still a long time to be sitting in one spot.
It is, but as somebody who works in coffee shops, like it's not that hard to do.
Yeah, I guess that's another world that I don't belong to.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, so like I said, it sounds like they had just kind of been bickering throughout the day and it just escalated. Apparently everything came to a head when he like got dirt in the van. He kept on talking about how his feet were dirty and like he got in the van and I guess Gabby freaked out on him, which I get because as you know, when things are going badly, sometimes it's something little that causes you to freak out.
We're talking about me or you?
Me.
Okay.
So they started arguing, and that's when Brian says that he locked the van, took the keys, and suggested that they take a breather. So he was like, all right, you go this way, I'll go that way. Let's take a walk. There's plenty of shade. It's like nice out here. Let's just get away from each other for a few minutes. This is the part that is weird to me because he says that he took the keys because he didn't want her to take off with the van. Because he says that he doesn't have a phone, so if she leaves, he's like on his own. And he said, that's my big fear, that she's just going to take off and leave me here.
Hmm.
Yeah, but she wanted the keys, and that's kind of what led to that physical altercation, which he described earlier. This whole video is over an hour long.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, this was like a very long thing. And so, yeah, like I said, it's on our blog, so you can watch it. But the long and the short of it is that neither of them was arrested. Instead, officers told them to separate for the night. Now, apparently, the officer, the first one, he reached out to like a domestic violence organization, mm-hmm. and they facilitated getting Brian a hotel room for the night. So they told Brian to go to the hotel. They told Gabby to stay with the van, and they just told them not to contact each other that night.
Okay. She has the keys now, though.
Yeah. What's weird, though, about this is because, like, he had just said, oh, yeah, I don't have a phone, so I was afraid she was going to leave me. And then when the officer goes back to Gabby and is like, okay, we're doing, you know, we're going to separate you guys. Is there anything that you want me to tell him for you? She was like, well, make sure he takes his phone charger because he's really bad about that.
Mm.
And he goes and like makes a joke about, yeah, he's like, oh yeah, I always forget my phone charger. So but, like he has a phone. So I don't know what he was talking about. I mean, that struck me as weird, but maybe I misunderstood him. He was very jumpy, like he wasn't making a lot of sense. So I don't know. Maybe he just meant he didn't have his phone at the time. Maybe his phone was dead. Maybe his phone, you know, I don't know.
Sure.
But that did strike me as odd. Anyway, both of their stories basically matched up. They both basically kind of said the same thing, like this led to that, and you know, like he was pushing me and I hit him, I scratched him, whatever. I mean, the biggest discrepancy is that like when he hit the median, he told officers that Gabby grabbed the wheel. She told officers that she was hitting him and that's why he crashed. So I mean, that's somewhat of a discrepancy, I guess, but both of them say that Gabby physically is like the reason why he hit the median. Because of course the officers are like, have you been drinking? Right? Because it's a couple fighting.
Right.
Car crash. Well, not a car crash, but you know what I mean. And she's like, no, we don't drink. So that wasn't part of it. So they've also both said that they didn't want to press charges. They didn't want the other one to get in trouble. So the officers are like, okay, separate for the night and we'll call it a day.
Yeah, it's also important to note that not every jurisdiction or not every state mm-hmm. has like mandatory arrests in potential DV situations.
Yeah.
So this may be a case where that was not instituted or
not in place. And that is interesting because so the first officer actually did call somebody, I think, to like get clarification on the rules around mm-hmm. that. And he actually told Brian, he's like, you know, this actually doesn't meet the letter of the statute.
Right.
So I'm not going to arrest her.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Right. Because in this situation, it seems mm-hmm. as though she was the aggressor.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, he's the one with physical like signs of violence on him.
Right.
Yeah. And they're both admitting that she scratched him and hit him. So yes, you're right. So like, and that's why the domestic violence organization, like, I think got him the hotel room, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say that earlier.
Yeah. Because at first I thought that it was just because the van belonged to Gabby. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, okay, well, technically it's your van, so you stay with the van. But I think it's more because in this particular situation, she was kind of seen as the aggressor.
Right. And it's important to note that, you know, domestic violence situations are not always the typical, you know, male beating the woman or
yeah, no, absolutely. They have you. It takes all forms.
Right. So, but again, like I said before, not every state, city, county has the same rules regarding mandatory arrests in, mm-hmm. in DV situations.
Yeah. What I will say is I think that all of the officers involved like handled this in a very friendly, like de-escalating kind of way.
Well, yeah, you have to. I mean, you have to de-escalate the situation.
It's, right.
It's a bad spot to enter into.
No, it's a very bad spot. Yeah. And so it did seem, and that's probably why the police department released the footage so quickly. Because
sure. Yeah. Because if they did a good job and, yeah. you know, it kind of shows like, okay, like, hey, everybody's going to be like, why didn't you arrest somebody in
well,
this
exactly.
situation?
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Here's the reason why.
Right. And I think it's really good that they released the full yeah. like hour and 15 minute video because, yeah, like at this point with Gabby missing, with Brian back in Florida not talking, when the news came out about this incident, yeah, a lot of people were like, what the hell? Like, why didn't you arrest him? Why didn't you throw him in jail? This is your fault now. So it was
it's not,
you're right. Yeah. And it was very smart of them to release the full footage to give context because, yeah, I mean, I see why this happened, like why they separated them, why they didn't arrest anybody. Because like I said, the guy even said, he said, this does not meet the statute. Like,
right.
I can't arrest her. Based on what we've got here, you know, and you're saying you don't want her arrested. Like she's saying she doesn't want you arrested. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
he did what he could do. You know, he did what he was supposed to do in that situation.
Right. And I'm not a huge fan of like mandatory DV arrests or mandatory arrests in general,
mm-hmm.
because it's very easy to write something into law saying like, police officers have to arrest in a certain situation, but mm-hmm. no situation is ever going to fit that specific criteria.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
like, yes, I do think that in a domestic violence situation, you definitely need to tread lightly, but also push for information. And, but I also think that cops in those situations shouldn't be the only ones called.
Right. Right.
And I don't think that cops should be making the ultimate decision in yeah. those situations. It's a tough call. It's a tough situation. And then, you know, if you have a domestic violence situation and you're mandated to arrest somebody, but you as the police officer are like, okay, well, he said, she said, he pushed, she pushed, or whatever. Like, would you flip a coin? You
yeah,
know what I mean? Like
yeah.
if you're obligated by law to arrest somebody as a police officer in that situation, look, I'm very much for, you know, police officers getting involved in these situations. But again, not being the only agencies involved, making the ultimate decision and helping as much as they can. But I don't think a mandatory arrest for all of those situations, like blanketed across the law, is really helpful per se, because that could also lead to all kinds of other issues.
Yeah, it's tough. And this is a tough situation because, I mean, now in hindsight, I'm sure both of, you know, all of the officers, because there were
sure.
several officers who
yeah,
were there.
Yeah, hindsight
right?
is 2020.
And so I'm sure they're thinking like, oh God, like maybe we should have done something more or, you know, whatever. I don't know. But I mean, it's a tough spot, but I get why they let both of them go. But of course, I've already seen people compare Brian's demeanor in this video to Chris Watts.
There we go. I was wondering where that was going to come
from. With how jumpy he was and you know, and all that, and his body language. And like, yes, I see it too. I do. But I am also incredibly jumpy around police officers, and I cannot stop talking, and I can't stop making dumb jokes.
Makes our marriage wonderful.
I know, like I can't stop talking and making dumb jokes, and yet you still married me because that's how I am around you constantly. But it's like a disease, and I see a lot of that in the way Brian is behaving during this stop. Like I know, I mean, I've never been stopped by police for anything like this. I've only been stopped for like traffic offenses, and this is kind of a traffic offense. Like that's part of this.
To an extent, yeah.
Yeah, and so like, a lot of the dumb shit he was saying, like, I know I've said before, or I know I would say.
Like what? You know how it is?
Well, maybe not that, but like I do, like I say the dumbest shit and I'm always trying to make a joke. And like, I don't know why I think that's going to get them on my side. I don't think it does.
I'm probably not.
But I'm always trying. And I don't know. So what I'm going to do is, again, this is on our blog, this whole thing. I want to show you just like a short, tiny clip just so you can hear, like see both of them talk and kind of get their demeanor during this.
Okay.
Okay. So we're going to pause and do that real quick.
I don't know. We've been fighting all morning and he wouldn't let me in the car before. And
why wouldn't he let you in the car? Because you're OCD?
Told me I needed to calm down. But I'm perfectly calm. I'm calm all the time. And he really stresses me out. And I just... And this is a rough morning.
Well, wow. She just gets worked up sometimes. And I try and really distance myself from her. So, like, I lock the car and I walk away from her. What happened this morning is that she's trying to start up, like, her own little website blog and everything. So, like, every time... And we really had a nice morning, if anything. But she just... I worked up because we were trying to get going and get our day going because we want to go like garden for the summer time.
Okay. You want to tell me about those scratches on your face?
She had a cell phone in her hand. That's why I was pushing her away. Because she wanted to, I locked the keys so I could walk away. I said, let's just take a breather and let's not, you know, go anywhere. Let's just calm down for a minute. She was getting worked up. And then she had her phone and was trying to get the keys for me. So I got in the way. I was just trying to, I know I shouldn't push, but I was just trying to push her away. Well, let's just take a minute, step back and breathe, and we'll see if she got me with her phone. Can I see your hand?
Okay, so I just showed you just a minute of Gabby talking and then Brian talking.
So I don't think it's the same nervousness or agitation as Chris Watts.
Really?
No. I mean, obviously there's agitation or he's anxious. Just in general, they both are.
Mm-hmm.
But Chris Watts wasn't making eye contact with anybody.
That is, yeah. And Brian's making, has no problem
making
eye contact.
He's making eye contact the entire time. So is Gabby. I mean, they're both engaging with the officers. They're having conversations. There's a lot of animated hand movements on both of their parts. But, you know, if we're to believe both of them, saying the same thing in separate conversations with different police officers, they basically just had a big fight and then they got pulled over by what looks like several police officers.
Yeah, it was. And there were park rangers there. Like it ended up being a whole thing.
I mean, I'm sure their adrenaline is rushing.
Yeah.
There's nervousness. Like it's not a comfortable spot to be in, but I don't get the sense that that either of them are necessarily hiding anything.
No. And I think I would agree. Right. I think it was just the general like nervousness and adrenaline of the situation.
Right.
Keep in mind though, you know, the body cam footage that people are comparing this to that of from Chris Watts, you know, he had already murdered his wife and children.
Correct.
And in this body cam footage, Gabby's clearly
still
fine.
Alive. Yeah.
And perfectly fine. You know, he's the one who's injured at this point. Right.
Right.
So, you know, I'm not saying that like, again, I don't know what happened, but he, at this point, when we're seeing this footage, he certainly had not done anything.
Right.
Really, you know?
That we know of.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she was still alive and healthy. And
right.
So there's that. But this clearly shows that the two had issues, right?
Sure.
I mean, this is documented. They became violent. This is documented. We don't know if this had happened before. To my knowledge, this is the only time that the police have ever been involved in anything with the pair. But I do want to talk about something else that recently happened in the same area. And it's the reason that I kind of wanted to cover this case now, because it's very bizarre. And I would like to get your take on it, Mr. I don't believe in coincidences until I do. Okay, so this traffic stop with Gabby and Brian happened on August 12th outside of the Moonflower Co-op in Moab. On August 13th, newlyweds Kylan Schultz and Crystal Turner were seen leaving a bar in Moab around 10:30. Kylan worked at Moonflower Co-op. On August 18th, the two were found shot to death at a nearby campsite. So we have a double murder and a disappearance happening in roughly the same place at roughly the same time. This case with Crystal and Kylan has been making the news. This came up in the news, obviously, before this case, and I'd seen it because, again, it's this newlywed couple, and they were found shot to death at a campsite right around where this stop happened.
Okay. What date were they found again?
They were found on the 18th. They were last seen alive on the 13th.
And when did this stop happen?
The 12th.
Huh. That's interesting.
Gabby and Brian had been at the Moonflower Co-op. He mentions that at one point during this stop. And that is where Kylan worked.
Hmm. Nothing to say that there's anything connecting them other than the Moonflower Co-op.
Right.
Okay.
And the time, you know?
Sure. But we also have somebody saying that they saw Gabby later. In Wyoming.
Yes. And thank you, because you are clearly paying attention. So Gabby was allegedly known to be in Wyoming. Again, I don't know if that's true. The GoFundMe says that that's where she was last known to be, not that she was last seen there.
Yeah, what does that mean? Last known to be.
Exactly. I think that's very interesting wording. Now, you did ask me about the Instagram posts and when the last ones were. And I said that the core Instagram posts ended on August 12th at Arches National Park. But those were not Gabby's last posts. Okay. There were two more after that. One is about a dude leaving trash in a national park. And the other is her in a skirt and top saying Happy Halloween. These posts are dated August 19th and August 25th. But there are a few things that bother me about them. Every single post that Gabby made on their trip from July 4th to August 12th was tagged with a location. These last two were not. Now, Gabby looks lovely in all of the photos she posted of this trip, but she also looks like somebody who is on a cross-country trip in a van.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's wearing shorts and t-shirts, you know, bathing suits, like half the time her hair's up in a ponytail. But in this last post, she's dressed up with like full hair and makeup. And she has this crocheted pumpkin that she's posing with outside in front of a mural in August.
Right. saying happy Halloween.
Right. And like none of that felt right to me, you know? Like I just did a quick scroll through her posts and those two look different from the others. So I went ahead and I looked at the comments of that last one, the pumpkin one, because that's the weirdest one. Like the one about the guy throwing trash in the park seemed pretty like on par with stuff that she had posted previously. But again, no location, unlike every single one of her other posts. But I did take a look. And so an astute commenter recognized the mural she was posing in front of. And it's in Ogden, Utah. Now, that person also says that there was a maker's fair at the venue. So that could explain the pumpkin in August, which also like struck them as weird, you know?
Yeah.
But they're like, well, you know, there was somebody who was selling things similar to that. So like maybe she just picked it up from that. And that's good information. And, you know, I did look it up and like, yes, this big, she's posing in front of a big butterfly mural and it is in Ogden, Utah. But to me, this also underscores the fact that there's no photographic evidence that says she ever made it out of Utah. Because even if you look at that one video that they posted on the YouTube channel, which was posted, I believe, on the 19th, first of all, it's 8 minutes long. The first 4 minutes are from their previous cross-country trip. A lot of it's in California. A lot of it is in the Nissan Sentra, not in the van. Then about like 4 or 5 minutes into it, you get like footage from this trip with the van and them camping and in their tents and whatever. And it's kind of interspersed with like them talking to the camera and then just like clips with music behind it. But the last clip where they're actually talking, they talk about being in Utah. And that's the last part of it. Like there's nothing
beyond Utah.
Beyond Utah.
Okay.
So there are dates and posts beyond August 12th, but there is nothing beyond Utah. And Gabby's mother also says that she got a text from her daughter on August 30th.
Okay.
But she now does not believe that was actually Gabby.
Do we know the contents of the text?
No, that hasn't been released.
Okay.
With all of this, it's just, it's hard to say. Like, maybe I'm wrong, right? Maybe she was alive and well and posing with pumpkins on August 25th in Wyoming or in Utah, but posting it from Wyoming. Or maybe she disappeared well before that in Utah.
I'd be curious to see, and of course, we're not going to know this because it's an open investigation, but so there's a text received by her mother from her phone on August 30th. I'm sure that the police are investigating and trying to find out where that, what cell phone
where that originated.
Yes.
Yeah.
Again, you wouldn't get that from the mom's phone because receiving is not the same as sending.
Right.
Sending gives you the actual location, not the receiving.
Yeah.
So, again, they're not going to release that. So I'm, I would be curious about.
Well, and also, you know, if you, all right, so we have iPhones. You look in our photos, and what happens? All of our photos are organized by where they were taken.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know if she had an iPhone. I don't know if she had an Android. I don't know how Androids work, but obviously, like, there's metadata. That's the thing about smartphones. There's a ton of metadata. And if she was posting those Utah pumpkin photos from Wyoming, either there should be metadata on her phone if that ever, I mean, which I'm sure will not be found. Or, I mean, I would think that being able to get into her Instagram account, that Instagram would have some sort of information on that.
Perhaps. I don't know enough about Instagram. And but then therein lies another problem of, you know, can they get into her Instagram account?
Right. And I'm sure they would be able to at some point, but I think it just takes time, right?
Yeah.
And this is also new. So I'm sure these are all avenues that they're exploring, but avenues that they probably don't have answers about right now, right?
Yeah.
And either way, Brian isn't talking. And right now, you know, while they're exploring all of those different avenues, I mean, that would be their most direct way to getting answers.
Mm-hmm.
Police have officially named him as a person of interest.
You think?
I mean, exactly. Like, and even and Brian's lawyer is like, well, this is a formality, which to be fair, yeah.
Sure. Yes, it is. It is a formality given that he was the last person with her. However, I don't know. The 11 days that he was just home without her and no, he's not saying anything to anybody outside of his parents and nobody's talking. Like, I get if you're trying to cover something up or not let personal information out or whatever, but I mean, you got to look at how that looks. I mean, the optics of that, it's sending the message that, you know, hey, yeah, I'm just, I killed her in Utah and I'm just not going to say anything.
Right.
You know,
like in those 11 days that he was home before Gabby was reported missing when, you know, there was no police involvement whatsoever, Brian's parents got him a lawyer and they basically went underground. So when police did finally come around to their house and knocked on their door, Brian's parents presented them with a letter from the lawyer and was like, yeah, we're not talking to you at all.
I mean, it just screams guilty, you know? And
and it's tough, right? Because like, let's say, I mean,
hey, we don't know the circumstances.
We don't, let's just say that they got into a fight and Gabby left him.
Yeah.
And he is completely innocent and nothing happened. But yeah, you're right. The optics
are then why wouldn't
really bad.
If that was the case, why wouldn't you say that?
Because I think regardless of what happened in this situation with her whereabouts unknown, I think any lawyer would say, keep your mouth shut.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I don't know.
If he's saying, no, she left me in Utah. She's staying there. She met a new man. She did whatever. I still think a lawyer would be like, keep your mouth shut.
But why would they need to go to the extent to get the lawyer in the first place? So he...
Because I think it's clear how bad this looks.
Now, sure. But when he first gets home, I'm sure...
When he gets home,
his parents are like, where the fuck is Gabby?
Yeah, and he's like, oh, I don't know. And she's not showing up. Then they're probably like, this looks fucking bad.
I don't know. I think... To jump to the point of getting a lawyer, I think he knows something. He said something to his parents, and they're trying to cover his ass.
Oh yeah, I mean,
like
I'm sure.
And to what extent we don't know, of course, but like,
yeah.
I don't think it would be like, I don't think at any point if one of our kids came home in this situation was like, yeah, she broke up with me or whatever, and she's off doing her own thing. I don't think any of us would be like, let's lawyer up. Cause the lawyer was already there before the cops were ever called.
Right. But that was like 11 days. Right. So what if, you know, I hate the term devil's advocate and I hate the whole idea of it because I think it's stupid, but all right, let's say this. September 1st, Brian gets home, tells a story. Gabby broke up with me, told me to take the van, told me to come home. She left. The parents are like, oh, that's really sad. That sucks. Okay. They move on. They bake a cake, whatever. September 3rd, September 4th, nobody's heard from Gabby. She was living at that house. So one would think she had a bunch of stuff there. So one might think like, hey, we might want to hear from her. And by this point, maybe the parents are calling. Maybe Gabby's parents are calling and saying, hey, like, what's happening with Gabby? We haven't heard from her. Maybe the parents are going like, this seems a little weird. And are saying, hey, Brian, what happened to Gabby? And he's like, oh, she broke up with me. She broke up with me. She's gone. She's gone. She's gone. I didn't do anything. And they're like, okay, well, her parents are wondering where she is. She's not talking to her parents. This is getting weird. Let's say it's then September 6th, September 7th. Same thing. No Gabby. Like, nobody knows where she is. And the parents think, okay, she broke up with you. She's in Utah. She's in Wyoming. She's wherever. But this doesn't look good. What if they say she's missing? What then? Maybe we should talk to a lawyer, right? Because I'm sure at that point, Gabby's parents are like, you know, we're going to report her missing, whatever. If they're already threatening that, then I can see why Brian's parents would be like, all right, we should talk to somebody. Then they talk to somebody, and that somebody says, shut your mouth, don't say anything. If somebody comes, don't say anything.
It just looks really bad to me.
Yes, it looks terrible. It looks absolutely terrible.
I don't know. It just screams that you're hiding something. You're covering up for something.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't, clearly the parents are involved. Like, I don't know. Do we know, have they searched the van?
We do know. So yes, you're right. Everyone obviously thinks that Brian knows something, but as of this moment, there's no evidence that a crime occurred. So there's not really a whole lot police can do. But to answer your question, yes, they did seize the van. And I think they were able to do that because everything that I've read said that it was Gabby's van.
Okay.
So if it wasn't Brian's van, I think it would be a lot easier for them to seize it in this situation.
Yeah, sure. Right?
So they are currently performing tests and, you know, police have made kind of cryptic comments like, oh yeah, there are things that we need to look into further based on what they found in the van, like whatever, of course. Sure. So if they do, or if they have turned up some sort of physical evidence, then obviously, you know, that could change everything. Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, you know, Gabby's family isn't just sitting up on Long Island waiting for this. Like, they're out there searching, and that's why that GoFundMe was started, because, you know, searches cost money, especially when it's across the country.
Yeah.
So they are currently in Wyoming, from what I understand, but they're generally out west searching for her. So, you know, I do want to put that out there. Like, if anyone was on Gabby and Brian's route in July and August, whether it was in Kansas, Colorado, definitely Utah, or, you know, hell, even Wyoming.
Yeah.
And you think you might have seen them, like, please go to police. I mean, there's this one Instagram post where Gabby talks about, like, saving some guy from a hiking trail. He was in over his head and, like, it was too narrow and he got stuck. So, like, you know, I don't know if those people have come forward yet. It was the guy and his wife. But, like, those are people who, you know, need to come forward, who, like, need to go to the police to just say whatever they know. Because even though this was days before anything happened to Gabby, like, they might have seen something. They might still know something. Because no matter how insignificant the information may seem, it could end up being vital to this case. Gabby's parents are, of course, going completely out of their minds. Not only is their daughter missing, but their future son-in-law and his family are doing nothing to help find her. So I'm going to leave you with a letter that was just released today. Gabby's family also got a lawyer, and they released this letter basically addressed to Brian's parents. Quote, we are writing this letter to ask you to help find our beautiful daughter. We understand you are going through a difficult time and your instinct to protect your son is strong. We ask you to put yourselves in our shoes. We haven't been able to sleep or eat and our lives are falling apart. We believe you know the location where Brian left Gabby. We beg you to tell us. As a parent, how could you let us go through this pain and not help us? As a parent, how could you put Gabby's younger brothers and sisters through this? Gabby lived with you for over a year. She was going to be your daughter-in-law. How can you keep her location hidden? You were both at Jim and Nicole's house. You were both so happy that Brian and Gabby got engaged and were planning to spend their lives together. Please, if you or your family has any decency left, please tell us where Gabby is located. Tell us if we are even looking in the right place. End quote.
It's gutting.
Yeah.
I mean, it hurts. It hurts hearing that as a parent.
Yeah.
You know, just imagining either side, but I mean, definitely imagining Gabby's parents and what they're going through. It's terrible. It's just awful.
It is. So again, keep an eye out and let's bring Gabby home. Gabby Petito was reported missing on September 11th, 2021. She was last seen sometime in August in either Utah or Wyoming. She is 5'5" and 110 pounds. She has blonde hair and several tattoos, including a triangle tattoo on her left arm with flowers and a Let It Be tattoo written on her right arm. She has a belly button piercing. If you have any information on Gabby Petito's disappearance, please call the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI. That's 1-800-225-5324. You can see all the sources for this episode, along with photos and videos, at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at @ATTWGPod on Instagram and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketsa. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery. So you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. Prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Granger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing. Which is why you can count on Granger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRANGER, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm not exactly a tech genius, but I knew one thing for sure. If I wanted my small business to crush it, I needed a website that worked like a pro, and I needed it yesterday. Lucky for me, Bluehost made it ridiculously easy. With their AI design tools, building my website was a walk in the park. I could customize, optimize, and monetize everything exactly how I wanted. In just a few minutes, I had a secure site up and running. I couldn't believe how straightforward it was. And getting found online? Bluehost helped me with that too. I perfected my keywords and meta descriptions with their search engine tools. The AI even gave me suggestions to improve my pages. Now I can sit back, relax, and focus on my customers while my website continues to rank higher and higher on Google. With their 30-day money-back guarantee, I wasn't worried about taking the plunge. And now I'm so glad I did. Head over to Bluehost.com and build something special today.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12-powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.